From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
Sustainability of seminary education in a shaky economy. Our guest, the president of Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary, Dr. Michael Cooper White, who is the author of several books, On a Wing and a Prayer. It's a study of leadership by a man who knows his theology and knows how to fly a plane. And Church Administration with Robert Bakker, which is exactly as the title indicates. And the most recent one, published in 2008 by Augsburg Press, Augsburg Fortress, The Comeback God, a Primer of Christian Theology, especially for lay folks. Congratulations on all this while you've been president and trying to figure out the sustainability of the seminary. I won't try to set the stage. I can just say most of us recognize that expenses for students and education is a major national issue today. In the meantime, the sustainability of smaller colleges and seminaries is, let's just say, is becoming an issue, obviously. Some are closing, some are merging, some are finding new ways to survive. And I said I wouldn't set the stage, but to set you up perfectly for this, I want to add that Gettysburg Seminary is one of those who seems to be surviving relatively well.
Well, thanks, Jerry. It's always great to be in conversation with you. You and I have been conversation partners for over 40 years since I first came to Seminary Ridge as a student, and you were already back then a professor, and you continue to be one of my teachers and great conversation partners. I think you've named it well. Indeed, all of higher education is in a time of great change. A part of that certainly is technology, the kinds of ways in which education now can be delivered with more and more courses online and so on. You've pointed to the economic challenges. One doesn't have to read far in newspapers these days to read about colleges, universities, other schools that are facing the challenges of fewer dollars and scarcity of resources, and that certainly is true for us in the world of theological education as well. We're all scrambling, I think, to find sustainable trajectories to ensure that these incredibly important and great institutions remain on the map in the decades to come.
Those of us who speak this way are obviously dedicated to education on a smaller scale, and I think seminaries in America have been very much focused on that, even though they might be associated with the university and, of course, abide by university standards. But you're speaking as one who then is committed to trying to make this sort of a style of education work in the 21st century, despite the challenges.
Yes, absolutely. I have said in many venues, in some ways, seminaries, small schools of theological education, are the last mom-and-pop grocery stores left in a world of educational supermarkets. And I'm grateful for those mom-and-pop grocery stores.
They're the single-engine Viper Cubs fly rather than the 747s.
Exactly. I think there is a place. A seminary education, preparation for ministry in the church, we talk about being a combination of education and formation, spiritual formation, formation as a leader, and in many ways community life is so important, and that can happen in unique kinds of ways in schools that remain relatively small, and yet, as you point out, have to meet all the same standards as the great universities. We are accredited by the same body that accredits, you know, the large universities here in the East Coast, and have to meet those same standards of excellence in terms of our faculties, credentials, and pedigrees, and
curriculum,
and all the other ways.
So these are some of the challenges insofar as what we want to preserve, if at all possible. The changes that are coming down have already taken place. I've experienced them myself, as you know.
Yeah.
Too well. The technological changes to which some of us had to be dragged, kicking and screaming, still screaming. But then there's the specific issue of funding. Seminaries in America are not funded by the state.
Right.
Through the universities. They must be funded by private individuals, churches, and all the rest. Endowments were slow in developing because there was more direct support. Now, with increasing costs and declining, I presume declining contributions from the churches, that puts a lot of pressure on endowments.
Yes.
And in a shaky economy, the endowments have not produced well.
These have been challenging times, particularly the last half dozen years or so, and I think almost all schools have had to become leaner. We've had to become more efficient, and we've had to rely more and more on the generosity of individuals who recognize the value of these kinds of institutions. Here at Gettysburg, we're taking steps right now to increase the income from what we call our annual fund, even as we continue to build the endowment. That involves working with individuals, with congregations, with individuals, particularly in terms of their legacy gifts. As we know, a lot of people in this country, over time, build up substantial estates, and if they will remember the seminary as well as their congregation and other valued organizations in their wills, that's a key component of building the endowment. Sometimes we work with people over years to cultivate that. And once in a while, as happened a couple years back, we get a letter out of the blue from an attorney saying that Ruth Shaw has remembered you in her will to the tune of $1.5 million. So, yeah, you've indeed pointed to the need for creative financing and finding ways to make sure these institutions are sustainable for the long term.
Tuitions don't do it anymore. So tuition is a factor, but not as large a one. And, of course, you don't want from the other standpoint, we're thinking about students into well-paying careers are having trouble meeting their obligations to repay debts for education. Then we're talking about ministers who are not among the most highly paid in society, trying to pay down a debt for seminary plus college. You don't want to raise tuition too much. So that's, what, 20% of income from for a seminary compared to endowments and other kinds of
It income? Varies considerably depending on the school and the size of school. For us at Gettysburg, yes, tuition provides less than 20%.
Less than 20.
Of the cost of an education. And that's partly because we're also so generous with our scholarships.
Yeah.
On average, we give half-tuition scholarships now to all of our students. Starting 2 years ago, recognizing the burden on graduates, we launched what we're calling Scholars of Abundance, where we say to a Master of Divinity student, after you make it through the first 2 years of your residential seminary education, the third year is on us. So in essence, we're giving full scholarships to all of our senior students. This whole matter of seminarian indebtedness is huge in the life of the church. This past Sunday, I was in a congregation, and I was talking with a young woman who was kind of thinking about seminary. She's now a lawyer, and she told me, I have $110,000 in student debt from undergraduate and law school. Well, on a lawyer's salary, she can pay that off.
Oh, in a couple of months. No, that's not true anymore.
That kind of debt for one who serves in a low-paying profession as a pastor or other church leader is pretty steep.
And, of course, it reverberates in so many ways. You want to provide for your own kids' education. You want to buy a home. If you've got that kind of indebtedness, a lot of these things don't work very well because the bank says, hey, wait, you've got to pay one down before you can borrow again. So it affects all of life.
And that's been another big change in the life of the church since you and I got started decades ago. Back then, when we both served parishes, they likely had a parsonage, a home in which the pastor lived.
Yes.
That's less and less the case. So, yes, pastors, seminary graduates have all the same expenses as everybody else, and in many cases at salaries far below what others are earning.
One quick moment here before we move on to a couple of the other issues related to education in the modern age, and that is, I offered you a compliment earlier, and now you can run with it if you'd like. Gettysburg Seminary is so far surviving some of the bumps and ruts in the road. Any secrets? You said being lean was one of them, and of course developing friends was a second one.
Yeah, we're blessed in many ways. You pointed to the reality that church support from national and synod or regional sources has continued to decline. However, the churches in this area, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, Washington, D.C., which is our basic supporting region, have continued to be disproportionately generous, and we're blessed by that. We work hard at that relationship of maintaining strong ties with congregations, with synods, with the national or churchwide expression of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. We have also taken, you know, the hard steps of reducing budget. We have three fewer faculty now than when I came, mm-hmm. and so like in so many arenas, we're asking fewer people to do more with less, mm-hmm. and that's just kind of a reality of the times in which we find ourselves.
Making adjustments on both ends, trying to increase income, trying to be the most efficient and effective with what is there is so far the formula for moving ahead.
And another real key, Jerry, is collaboration. More and more institutions are collaborating. Here in our case, we're in a new round of conversations with our nearest academic institution, which is Gettysburg College, right down the hill from us, looking at some ways we might share some of our administrative tasks, and even faculty, perhaps, mm-hmm. as time moves forward. Mm-hmm. And that's happening in more and more places. Sure. Two of our Lutheran seminaries in just the past couple of years have actually merged mm-hmm. with Lutheran universities. And that will realize some cost savings and mm-hmm. efficiencies and hopefully enhance their missions at the same time.
And then, not to editorialize, but I'll editorialize, then you've got questions of identity.
Yes. Yep,
which this seminary has been able to preserve.
And right.
The new place, the new arrangements will have to find new ways of becoming identifiable as institutions in themselves.
They involve very careful planning and careful negotiations to, ensure that a small seminary is not swallowed up by a big university.
And not to sound reactionary, because in Europe this is the model all the time at universities, and at one time had been thought to be the model for America 50 years ago when you and I first started.
Right.
And that was not accepted at that time, and maybe now it'll be imposed upon us.
Yeah, a number of us have been saying we're probably in the midst of the most dramatic changes in the world of theological education in at least 50 years.
Yeah, at least, yeah,
if not more. You and I remember some of the big changes in the past.
They were, but weren't they smaller bumps in the road than what were? They did not. They were challenges to such thing as mergers. I thought also a major one was increasing the competence of the faculty. It has been very good, but a different kind of academic competence.
Right.
Not better, just different apples and oranges. But the ones today, they were not threatening to our overall existence. Today, seminaries have to think about, are we going to make it? Or am I being melodramatic?
Well, I don't know. Remember back to our era in the late 60s and early 70s, and all institutions, I think, felt pretty threatened, didn't they, back in that era? And many were questioning if we need
indeed, you're right, yes, yes.
Were they relevant?
Yeah. Oh, yes, 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 why are we here? Yes, oh, yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And you and I remember 1970 when our church made the decision to ordain women.
Yes.
For the first time, and that wasn't an easy change to swallow for some of our brothers. It's been one of the big changes, one of the great changes. When I came to seminary, you'll recall, you were teaching here. Uh-huh. In a class of 60, we had 6 women, so 10%. Today it's 50-50.
50-50. Mm-hmm.
And what a delight that change has been. Yes, what a gift in the life of the church.
Well, it's funny how this was going to be about you and me and not about the sustainability of education. But the autobiographical comments probably illustrate the larger theme. But it's funny that I would say, oh, those were just mere bumps in the road as you look back 50 years, when at the time they were certainly a lot more threatening than they seem now. So it's what's around us always seems more of a crisis than what we've overcome. There's a lesson to be learned in that.
It helps to take the long view.
It does, yes, or to have a poor memory.
And as can uniquely say at this seminary, we've survived the greatest battle ever fought on American soil. I think we'll get through this, whatever this is at the moment.
They almost took it from us. They had it for 3 days, but they almost took it from us. Speaking about that, one of the things that Gettysburg has consciously tried to do, and did it theoretically by being the crossroads of history and hope as their major theme for the past.
Right.
How many years have you been with us?
13.
13 years has been our theme, and you put that into practice in a big way by offering to the nation, in cooperation with the Adams County Historical Society, a first-class, internationally ranked museum right here where we're broadcasting.
Seminary Ridge Museum opened on July 1st. It was the kickoff event for the observance of the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. Indeed, we have had this vision, and it was finally realized through this very creative partnership with our local historic society and others. The community caught the vision that reopening Schmucker Hall as this grand museum would bring more people to Gettysburg and enhance the Gettysburg experience. One unique dimension of it is, as we say, we can go where the National Park Service can't in interpretation, because we can delve into questions of faith and freedom, of the role of religion, of how it was that two brothers sat at the same dining room table reading the Bible, same Bible, by candlelight, and then a few years later they end up shooting at each other across the lines. What were the operative, interpretive, or hermeneutical principles, and so on. So, yeah, we're delighted. The initial response has been very favorable. We've had over 15,000 people come through the museum now in its first months of operation. And yet we see this as integral to the mission of Gettysburg Seminary, as you point out. We're here at the crossroads of history and hope, and we can invite our students to delve more deeply into what I call the great questions that that place offers.
I have to say, it is a major change. The community is coming to the to Seminary Ridge, which it does mean the idea of an isolated, self-imposed isolation, not rigid, but in the sense of wanting to be quiet and contemplative. That image of the seminary has changed here. There's no question about that. As hundreds of people, now you say thousands of people, come in and out of this ridge to look at this building. And I should tell our readers, our listeners, that we're talking about a historic building, an artifact into which one can go rather than just put in our hands and look at.
Right.
They're coming here to see that and to be enlightened about issues in Civil War history that they don't get anywhere else. But it's changed the image of the seminary, and it's changed the campus and the way our students have to relate to the world.
And I think it's really helped us in terms of the local community, too. We've never had great town-gown tensions, as exist many places, and yet this has really raised the profile of the seminary in the local community, as well as, you're saying, nationally and even internationally. And we probably should steer our listeners to the Seminary Ridge Museum online.
Yes.
Just do a Google search with Seminary Ridge Museum, and you can find out all about it and how to get tickets and come here and visit us.
Plan your next vacation around this artifact that you can actually enter. In the last few minutes, Mr. President, the winds of change we've been talking about have also affected the National Church, and since you've had leadership roles both before you were president here and then during this period, you've been a candidate for secretary of this church. You've witnessed firsthand some of the things that are happening. Is it unusual, unique, what you've experienced firsthand, or is it part of a wider trend in the whole of Protestantism or the whole of the Christian church in America?
I think these are really exciting times in which to be the church. We mentioned earlier that you and I recall 1970, when the first woman was ordained in the Lutheran Church in this country. Reverend Beth Platts was a graduate of this institution, another first of Gettysburg. We were the first school to tenure a woman as professor back in the 1940s, when that was a radical thing to do. And yes, you're pointing to the fact I was present in Pittsburgh just a few weeks ago when the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America elected its first female presiding bishop. That was a high moment of excitement. Came as a surprise to many, since the incumbent had stated his availability. But the theme of that assembly was all things being made new. And indeed, it's exciting to have Bishop Elizabeth Eaton now as our new presiding bishop. She's not unique. The Episcopal Church for the past half dozen years or so has also had a female presiding bishop. So these are indeed very exciting times. As one of my former bishops and bosses used to say, I'm really glad to be a part of the church of my adult years, which is different in many ways from the church of my childhood. And here at Gettysburg, we're seeking ways to continue to be on the cutting edge, preparing leaders for the church of today, but also looking 10 and 20 and 50 years down the road and attempting to find a way to ensure that we'll continue preparing leaders for the church here at the crossroads of history and hope.
The president of Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary is our guest today. He is the author, pilot, administrator, pastor, and a very nice interviewee. He's Dr. Michael Cooper White. Have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.